Hi everyone, welcome to Righty's House on Ringer FC. It's going to be every Wednesday, very excited about it. You can hear it in my smiley face. I'm going to have my rotating, contributing guests, Jeanette Kwachi, Musa Kwongo, The Athletic's Carl Anka. And joining me first is my man, Ryan Hun. How you doing, Ryan Hun?
Hi, right? Pop round for a brew.
Thank you very much.
Happy first episode.
You know something? It's really strange because I'm so excited about it, Ryan, because I just feel there's a certain amount of control and freedom which podcast gives people.
Yeah. You've not had your own one, have you, before?
No, I've not, Rye. And, you know, being in the kind of, like, I'd say, overproduced world of football, it's nice to be able to speak about football how you speak about football. And what's great about podcasts, Ryan, is the more you listen to it, is people are speaking about football, how people talk about it. Because whatever we say about the different shows, Match of the Day, the Sky shows, the BT shows and that, you know, the analysis and the way the guys are talking about it, the only time that people really engage and think to themselves, that was really cool, is when they're speaking where you feel like they are actually being natural and speaking about football, not just in a natural way. Do you know what I mean, Ryan?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, we've got this first episode today where we chatted with all the contributors, didn't we?
Yes.
You're actually going to hear me and Musa together later, which is going to be weird, but we did it a couple of days ago. Mm. How many times have we sat down now to, we did a load of dummy shows, didn't we?
Yeah, man. But it's just, what was cool about that is it's therapeutic. Mm. Because when you go on to doing the live shows, Ryan, like Match of the Day, England games and that, there's so much stuff that you have to have in your head simply because there's so many things you have to reach in respect of what you're saying. You're not thinking about anything other than getting to that place, rather than thinking about, I want to think and talk about football instead of thinking about, right, you've hit that and you've said that and you've got to say this just in case they think that and they better say this about that lot, because if you don't say that, then they're going to say it. And so you're starting to feel about everything else, all the pressures that come from everything else when you're trying to talk about football on these shows, instead of actually talking about it how you want to. And that is what I want to do, yeah.
I think the cool thing is, like, obviously Musa and I do Stadio and you've been on Stadio a couple of times.
Mm.
And the good thing is you're not on the clock.
Absolutely right. No time. The time.
Yeah.
The time is one of the things that, you know, people don't understand. And this is why, you know, there's an adrenaline kind of buzz you get when you're doing Match of the Day, when you're doing England, especially when England get to the latter stages of a tournament, where you just feel the pressure again is like when you used to play, when you're in the tunnel, getting ready to go out and your belly's like that washing machine. I don't know if people understand what that feels like. Whatever you do and you get that those nerves and those butterflies, people call them, in your stomach. It's like the washing machine, but stomach. And you get that for Match of the Day all the time simply because it's so condensed, right?
Yeah.
Like, for instance, let's say we're doing Aston Villa and Southampton. And, you know, it's down the pecking order. But at the same time, Southampton and Aston Villa fans want to hear and see more about their teams in that forum. And unless they beat Man City or they beat Liverpool, then they're probably going to be down the pecking order. So you don't really get to speak about them as much. But at the same time, you try to read as much as you can about those clubs. Well, let's find out what the Villa fans are saying. See if we can ease some of that in, what the Southampton fans are saying. So you can give them their props and their time. What I would do, and what I'm going to be pleased, what I'm pleased about with this, and what be able to do this, is to be able to say, you know something, I just want to talk about Slaven Bilic and what's happened with West Brom, because Slaven's my mate.
Yeah.
You know what's really weird, Ryan, is being able to speak to the people who are the protagonists in the league, like I'm speaking to you now. So the problem that you have is to not give away the secrets. Because, you know, we're talking about people that you've got 20 years and 25 years of like relationship with, who speak to you and trust you. You know, and some of those people, I am hoping at some stage you might, and I'm not going to promise the listeners, oh, we're going to get this and we're going to, because like, all of a sudden you'll come in and we'll have somebody or something like that, because they'll do it like that. But the point I'm making is I'm not going to give away trade secrets, but like I say, I speak to people, and when I'm speaking to in this format, things just come out like Ron Burgundy. If it's in there, it has to come out. If it's on the pronter, It's on auto cue. I have to read it. If it's in my head, in some way, it has to come out. And that's what I want to share with people. You know, like with Ozil, you know, it is so sad.
Yeah.
A footballer can't play. And for whatever reason, a football club that's paying a footballer a vast amount of money to play for them, for some reason, don't want him to play.
Yeah.
It's absolutely tragic.
Yeah, I mean, whatever people think about it, that is the underlying thing, and it's just sad that a generational talent like that, which I think Mesut Ozil is, despite the stick he gets, is not in either squad list.
It's a shame.
So we're going to like get on to the regular contributors in a bit, because we sat down with Carl.
We sat down with Carl Anker from The Athletic, And I'm really looking forward to speaking to Carl with his Manchester United stuff and everything else, what he's interested in. Jeanette Kouachi.
Yeah.
You know.
Elite athlete.
Yes, man. She's an elite athlete, bro.
Yeah, like Olympian.
Like I say, I'm just excited to speak to Jeanette, because she's so enthusiastic and knowledgeable, and just like, you know what, when you're speaking to the athletes and, you know, the Olympics, and she's an Olympian, and what it takes, I don't know, Ryan, how I would be able to deal with trying to get to a level of performance that you have to attain and keep without getting injured for 4 years to then hopefully try and get into an Olympic squad. Mm. The drive, determination, and the guts to do that and then get there. And then sometimes people get injured while they're there, or injured in the last season before they get there. Those are the kind of things that I want to speak about as well. It's all the mental side of it. Mental ability to be able to come back from massive, massive adversity. Mm. And, you know, expectation. That's what I'm looking forward to speaking to with Jeanette, to be honest, because I it's something that it wasn't around when I was playing, but I would love to have played in a GB football team in the Olympics. Yeah. I'd have loved that, bro.
You and Ali McCoist up front?
Me and Ali McCoist. That would be so good. And the thing is, you know what? Me and Ali McCoist would probably share rooms. We get on so well. I love him so much.
But yeah, also on the podcast though, we were saying that you want to be like some stuff that you've done that week, and we'll talk about movies and stuff as well. And
yeah, but the thing is, right,
not just football,
that's what I want to do on here as well, because like I love films, and all films, you know what I mean? It's not like, and I'm not an expert. I just like what I like.
Mm.
Those are the things though, right? I want to talk about stuff like that. It might go across into films. But like, people will be surprised at what films, because I've seen all the Marvels, literally every single kiddie film. I've had to watch all the Frozens, watch everything with my girls, because I want my girls to be knowledgeable about films as well. Mm. We're getting to that stage now where, you know, like watching Avengers Endgame with my girls was just brilliant for them to see what it's like and what people do and sacrifice and how far you're willing to go to help and save. And, you know, we're talking about Avengers in the world, and it's brilliant. Like, you know, we watched Armageddon the other day. It was with Bruce Willis, with the girls. It was so good, because I was being so over the top with, because when I watch it with them, when things happen, I scream, and like my mum, it's like a West Indian thing. When we'd watch a film when we were kids, my mum, you know, she'd say, move, put me here, quick. It's behind you. That's how my mum would watch a film like that, Ryan.
like
they can hear her. Like, say, quick. My mum would say stuff like that when we'd watch the films. So I kind of do that with the girls now. I love watching films with them. We watch a film every Friday. We try and watch a film. It's a situation where I want to be in an environment where you're talking about it, where you feel free to talk about what you want to say. And I haven't got no problem with people critiquing and criticizing, but I've always been more susceptible to positivity. You know, there's nothing that's going to be on this and on Wrighty's house that is like slaughtering anyone or having a go. It's giving opinion, and I'll just try and do. I just want to do that so people understand. And people should know what I'm about now. I don't sugarcoat. I'm not sugarcoating. You know what I mean? I protect people. You know what I mean? There's some people who you do need to give a rocket. And stuff like that. But like, I just, like I said, I just want, and that's the thing as well, right? I want people to tweet in and you know what I mean? That kind of stuff. Just what do you think?
Yeah, we'll get the questions and stuff for future episodes, won't we?
Yeah, we should, we'll do stuff like that. But like, yeah, I'm, very much looking forward to it. Very much looking forward to it.
Well, we all are as well. I know everyone's really hyped to be involved, you know. So on that note, shall I get out of the way for a bit and let...
I was starting to feel a bit uncomfortable. I didn't want to say it to you.
Especially because I got to come back later with Musa.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Overstay my welcome. Typical, the only straight white boy on the podcast. Overstay his welcome.
Another guest that's going to be coming to Righty's house is a dear friend. Jeanette Kwashe, Olympian, ladies and gents. Elite athlete.
Hello.
Elite athlete in the house, in the hizzle. How are you doing, JK? And how are your family?
We're really good. But why did you say the most elite athlete?
Because two of elite, us. Like... No, man. No. Olympian. You know something? When I used to watch the Olympics,
yeah,
I used to want to be... You know the bit where you lot do the... When you lot come onto the track in your suits and all this kind of stuff. What was that like, Jeanette? Because like, you know, you all have to wear the same stuff. You're all excited. It's, you lot been training for 4 years.
Yeah, man.
You know, to get there. You finally get there. Talk to me, man. What's that like when you're all together?
Do you know what? It's crazy because you really take time to pick what you're going to wear. And maybe because I was one of the girls, like you really take time. Like you think, right, should I wear my all-in-one? Should I wear my hot pants? Should I wear my running knickers, my legs? It's a big, big deal. Like what you're looking
like. Do the girls get together? Line. That's what I'm saying with the start line.
Yeah. For the relay, the girls get together, definitely. Right. And you kind of pick what you're going to wear. But if you know you're going to have like a big moment, you know, how are you going to look? Because if you win the race, you've got to look on point, you know? So it's a lot. I think it's, I guess the similarity is similar to taking a real big decision-making penalty. Is that kind of energy that's going through you on the start line? Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's the kind of feeling it is.
I think I can only get into that ballpark with the energy side is when you're going to play a big game and you're in the tunnel.
Yes.
That's the kind of, that's the energy. It's like your stomach starts hurting because then you start, did you look at the opponents? Did you look at like, oh my God, she's been... Was you ever frightened of... When we used to play United and them teams when it was really, we were both... going for it. You didn't want to look at them, but you could tell when someone's scared is when they look at your boots. When they look down and look at your boots, they're looking, they're trying to find fault.
The most I've ever really felt that conscious was probably obviously the Olympic final, right? Because in the Olympic final, it was 2008. And I remember being on the start line, there were three Jamaican girls in the race, three American girls in the race. There's a lady from the Bahamas. And then there was me from London. And I'm looking at these girls and I'm like, these girls train in like Florida, Kingston, Jamaica, California. I train in Walthamstow in East London. Like it's just, it's so mad just looking at where everyone's come from. But we all deserve to be there. And I think that's the main thing as well. But you can't help but look. Like that's it's human nature. You have to look.
And what about your football? Where'd your love for football come from? I know the Ghanaian heritage, and we know how much football in Africa is just the thing. Where did yours come from?
Massively. It's my dad, isn't it?
Who did he support?
Arsenal,
Yeah, man. Your dad knows, man.
My dad knows. But do you know what's really funny? What? When he first came over, John Barnes was about it. So it was John Barnes. He was the one that all the black people looked at and thought, right, yes, John Barnes. He's the guy where he goes, we follow, right?
Yeah.
And then a few more of you lot came onto the scene and then you lot had a bit more flair, a bit more charisma. So they kind of moved with it because it wasn't necessarily, they didn't have an affiliation with a place or a space. Do you know what I mean? Right. It was more about the player. So my mum still supports Liverpool. I don't know, you know, that's just how she is.
Yeah.
But my dad, he's Arsenal from the early 90s to this day, you know, so he's been that, and because of that, you know, that's me. And my brother, he's a lost one, man.
Don't say he's Tottenham.
Nah.
Chelsea.
As a kid, he was big ass. No, he's West Ham. As a kid, as a kid, he was into it. Like Arsenal, when they did the double, he went down and he's got pictures of him holding both the trophies. And then one day he woke up and said he supports West Ham. And that was it.
That's something else. At some stage, we're going to talk about in Righty's house. We have to talk about how you supported your team and why, because I believe that a lot of people have had it forced upon them. And then once you pick the team, you're literally like, okay, I'm going to stay with it because for me, if I'm going to be totally honest, there was, when I was younger, my brother supported West Ham. And I always had a leaning towards Liverpool. when we was younger. And it's not just because...
Is this a revelation? Is this an exclusive here?
No. Okay, because I don't mind telling people, because I've got my story and it will come out as we do it. We'll come out, why Millwall? Then obviously the love for Palace. Then obviously Arsenal with David Rowcastle. But I'm talking about when you're younger, if I had the kind of... I probably would have supported Liverpool. But then once David Rowcastle, like I explained to people, went to Arsenal when he was in the 80s as a youth team player, like you said, everybody follows. So the whole estate followed Arsenal. And so that's where my Arsenal affinity came from. And then obviously once I played, I realised how much I loved them. And obviously Palace fans don't like to hear them because they think that it's once I went to Arsenal that all of a sudden I love Arsenal. But it goes back. But the point I'm going to make, and at some stage we're going to do it, is what team, if it was totally down to you, do you think you would have supported? You know what I mean? Don't answer that now, JK.
No, I'm not going to answer it. But I can just say, we've got two kids here. My son is at that age now where he's watching the game.
Yes.
And he's seeing it and he's watching the players. He knows who the players are. My husband's a massive Liverpool fan, right?
Mm.
And I'm looking at my son. By force, my husband's bought him Liverpool baby grows, you know, shirts. He's walking around with everything on, right? And I said, well, hold on a minute. Why didn't I get a say? He goes, why should you get a say? I'm like, what do you mean?
Mm.
Like, we made this child together. There should be a discussion about which team he supports, right? So anyway, the other day I said to my little boy, I said, who's your favourite football team? He said, Chelsea. I said, what?
What? Nice.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, why? He said, because my auntie's called Chelsea. I've got a sister called Chelsea. And because of that now, he thinks that, do you see what I mean? That's, it's like, it's a really weird way.
Yeah, but that should be enough for him. If then he likes Chelsea, then he should be able to be Chelsea because like for me, I didn't force Arsenal on any of my kids. They're just Arsenal because it was always Arsenal around them.
Yeah.
That's the way they went to watch. But the fact is, I believe there's a lot of people out there who love teams that deep down, like I like Liverpool. I always liked Liverpool. And there was something about them winning the league what made me quite pleased for them because I like the people as well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's something about them. There's something about Liverpool.
Yeah.
But you know, I've got to ask you about your favourite player of all time and why.
This isn't fair because this is a really, really, really hard question.
I wanted to come in hard to see what people are saying.
Right. My thing is this, right, yeah? You've got to remember the era that I grew up in and the era that I watched football, okay? So, mid-90s is kind of when football came into the consciousness and there happened to be a certain player at Arsenal who was about it. And I can't even mention his name, obviously, for obvious reasons. Exactly.
Pierre is amazing. Thierry's amazing, man. How are you not going to love Thierry? No one at Arsenal.
Listen, Thierry has to be my favourite player, but then you always think about, right, what got you into the game? What made you want to watch the game? What got you excited? I loved watching you play, but then you think about the Invincibles and what they did. Yeah. Like, Thierry Henry, definitely, because he brought something different to the league, like that nobody'd ever seen before. No, so for me, looking at someone like him, you know, French footballer, and he was the commercial side as well. He moved from it being just on the pitch to the adverts, and there was that. He was a wider player. So for me, it has to be Thierry. That whole Thierry, Patrick Vieira, like that whole era for me is like kind of kicked in.
You know something, JK? There's something with, especially Arsenal fans, they feel quite embarrassed to speak to me about Thierry being their favourite player. Whereas if I'm talking, if without the affinity that I've got with Arsenal and Thierry knowing him, if I'm watching Thierry from the outside, you want to hear how someone like Alan Shearer talks about Thierry, the respect and love he's got for him.
Yeah.
And I've got the same. Yeah. Because for some reason, people seem to think that I have something against him because, I don't know, the record, whatever it is, he came to Arsenal and he's the king. But the fact is, I admire him so much. It's very difficult to try and explain it to people without them thinking, yeah, he's just saying that.
But this is it. Like, you respect it because you understand what it takes to get to that level. Like, so as a sportsman to sportsman, you will absolutely understand and respect the pedigree and the work ethic, everything that it takes to be that kind of player. So, of course, you could... Listen, I'd be happy to talk to you about Thierry all day. But I think what people may think that you take it so personal because we literally look at football players and fans and there's this personal affiliation where you think to yourself, oh my goodness, like, do they get on? And you kind of make these scenarios up in your head. Like, so people think there might be some rivalry when actually you're just looking at each other respectfully as footballers. And I think that's important.
Yes. So Jeanette, JK, Mrs. Quache, if you're playing now, if you were playing now, which player do you think you'd be? And who would you like to play for, really? Just throw it in like that.
Do you know what? I would love to play for, at the minute, a team like Liverpool, simply because I love Jurgen Klopp. Okay. I love his management style. I love everything about him. Like, he reminds me of my old coach. Do you know what I mean? It's very motivational, very emotive, but there's a science behind it. So, like, I'd love to kind of be in that kind of setup. If I was looking at individual players, Jack Grealish, and do you know why? Because the fire in his belly right now, like, I used to thrive on that. Like, that would be my motivation every day to get up, to go training, and to make sure I was the best. Like, so there is that, because I like the element of trying to prove people wrong. So that, for me, would have been a big deal. And obviously, because Villa are playing amazingly as well.
Yeah.
And another player, sorry, I've got about a million players. Player, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because he is in sensational form. That he is on it. And you know that feeling, when you wake up and you are on it. There's no one can chat to you. Nobody can tell you anything. I'm going out today. I'm going to run 11 seconds flat in the 100 or you're going to bang a hat trick. And like, it has to happen. Like, there's no one can tell you any different. So I feel like Calvert-Lewin's in that kind of form. Yes. And I miss that. You know what I mean? I miss that kind of form.
It's funny. So. That's the kind of vibe. Exactly. You do miss that. That energy. Of feeling invincible, feeling like a superhero. Yes. I'm so pleased for
him. Those are the two things.
Yes.
Yeah, he's doing a great job, isn't he? Good. And he's a nice kid as well. Like, when you listen to him speak and everything else, you think to yourself, okay, we really want you to do well. Like, there's nothing about him that doesn't want you to make him succeed. Yes. So I'm into Calvert-Lewin at the minute. Definitely.
I like that, JK. Listen, I can't thank you enough, my sis.
See you soon.
We're going to do some more stuff, huh?
I'm very excited.
Nice one.
This is going to be great.
I love you, man.
Love you too.
God bless. And I'll speak to you soon.
See you soon. Bye. Yeah.
Bye. I'm delighted to welcome Carl Anker from The Athletic. Carl, I'm very pleased to have you in Wrighty's house, man.
I'm so glad to be here. It's all plush, good furnishing.
It's a beautiful house, huh?
Green velvet sofa.
It's anything you imagine it to be. That's what it is.
Got some light jazz playing.
Some light jazz.
I'm enjoying this.
Nice one, man. So Carl, we're going to get into it, my friend. So the question I want to ask you, very simple question. Everybody who's going to be on this, in Wrighty's house as the guest, is their best player of all time and why? Depending on the people and the way I've kind of like sussed out the people I've got on this rotating panel, it's going to be quite interesting. So who's your best and why?
This is a strange one for me to admit. So when I was on the playground, I used to always be Andy Cole.
Yeah.
Because as you can tell by my accent, I was a Manchester United fan. So I was always Andy Cole growing up. But as I've got older, I've definitely become a massive fan of Didier Drogba.
Wow.
There is just something about him, the way he carried himself playing in the Premier League, how he was sometimes the hero, sometimes the villain. He had big game prowess. What he's done back home in the Ivory Coast, I think is incredible. In terms of big game stuff and in terms of like the big moments, Drogba was having so much fun. And even little gestures he would do on the pitch, what he's done in interviews, I've tried coffeeing myself, which is weird. I don't think I'll ever pull off the perm.
Yeah. The straight perm.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever do that.
It was beautiful.
It was strong.
You know, the thing with him is, Carl, is I think that he was in danger. There was a period where he was in danger of people judging him for the antics, maybe like going down easy for a big man, you know, quotes, which I thought was a bit harsh, simply because some of the times what he did go through, he was right to go down. Yes, there was some where you thought, come, DDA, man, don't go out like that. But in respect of the number nine and the way he played that role on his own up there, just covering all the bases, literally doing everything, you know, like scoring the goals, linking the play, free kicks, assists. He's the one for me that made people say, that's where we've got to go. That's how we've got to do it.
Yeah, they were saying, I remember reading magazine interview saying, oh, Drogba's put to bed the 4-4-2. But when you think about it, his strike partner was basically Frank Lampard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that cool thing. Like Frank Lampard's goal scoring record, scoring 20 Premier League goals season on season, doesn't really happen unless Drogba's doing what he's doing. And they've still got the best record. I think they've got the best duo in terms of goals.
Yeah. Do you think is there anyone in the game now replicating that kind of midfielder supporting a forwards doing what he's doing? Who's at the moment, would you say?
I mean, Kevin De Bruyne and Aguero is
That's close. Vardy's literally doing it on his own, really. He's got so many different people doing it with him.
Vardy's so much fun.
What about Lewandowski?
Oh, man.
Is he another monster? Is he doing it on his own? Because you have to mention Lewandowski. I think Drogba definitely gets into that conversation.
Oh, yeah. The cool thing about Lewandowski is he's got so many nice wingers and inside forwards playing around him.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're that smart and you're that able to do stuff like that, and imagine being a winger and just knowing I can put it vaguely in that area and Lewandowski will do something.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I used to play on the wing sometimes and I get tired and I beat my man, I get it down to the byline and I'm not really looking where I'm putting the cross in. I'm like, I'm just going to put, you know, he's in there somewhere.
Yes.
Imagine being that sort of tired player, getting it in and Lewandowski does like a bicycle kick. You're like, yeah, yeah, I meant that. It's just...
What about the Andy Cole though? Because I remember Andy Cole, when I went to Arsenal, remember Andy Cole was somebody that they said, I remember I was doing something with Andy the other day. They said about Andy Cole, no. He's never going to score more than 10 goals because he's lazy. You know what I mean? They would talk about his attitude and stuff like this. I remember when I went there, all the players would say him. They'd point to him, Tony Adams, this one, that one, and say, he is something special, but I don't think he's going to get it. He's not going to get it in time. And I remember watching him in the games and it'd be very easy for people like the coaches and that to say, nah, move him on to someone else. Because when he was doing the running, he was like 30, 40 yards behind other people. We're talking about literally jogging when people are running. But when he played in the games, you could see that he'd done something. But you've seen that player cast aside so many times. So when he went to Fulham, I remember before he was going to Fulham, I said, Andy, just go and just score goals. Now, because how Andy is and how his demeanor is, he's always been like that. He's very calm, very cool. You know what I mean? He's always been like that. So when he went to Fulham, scored a couple of goals, but when he went to Bristol City and he really got the bug of playing and scoring, then you started to see it. That's when you could see the people at Arsenal start to say, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, but it's Bristol City. It was, you know. When he went to Newcastle, frightened the fucking life out of everyone. Somebody like I say who still doesn't get the credit for me. You know, when people talk about the top end of the Premier League,
everyone forgets him.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Like, you'd go to a pub quiz and they'll say top Premier League goal scorers, and you know most people will go Rooney, Shearer. Most people go Henry.
Lampard.
Everyone will forget Andy Cole. He's top five Premier League goal scorers, but he's always the pub quiz answer you forget. So when we did our thing at the Athletic about the top 60 in the Premier League, people. I was really happy Andy Cole came up.
Yeah,
really
he high has up there. To. He has to. So if you're playing now, which player would you like to be like or even play with? Who would you like to play with?
I think it'd be really fun being like a defensive midfielder who plays next to the guy.
You like, think so?
It'd be really cool. Imagine being the person that like makes a tackle and then gives it to someone else and the other person like does the counter-attack. You just get to like watch it all happen. Like,
oh. I need too much to be that guy.
No, I love watching goals happen. I'm the guy that in the group project at university who does like the bare minimum and then we'll take the award afterwards. That's me.
Yes, I see that position. I remember I was speaking to somebody the other day and we was talking about what positions you'd come back as and I thought, I'd like to be maybe a right wing back.
Oh, yeah?
I feel like I could do a right wing back because whatever position I'm playing, I want to be able to get forward and score and I want to be able to be expressive in what I'm doing. I don't want to destroy and then give it to Kevin De Bruyne. You know what I mean? I need more than that. This is why someone like, I like Kimmich.
Yeah.
I love him. And he's one that I do want to see in the Premier League. I love there's a vibe about Kimmich that I just love it. He's my favourite at the minute.
I just love players having fun. Like, imagine being Alphonso Davies right now.
Wow.
Imagine that year you've just had. It's like, well, just won everything in Europe.
Yes. I know. I think that's the position. So you want to be that guy. Yeah. You want to be the destroyer and then give it to give it to Jorginho, give it to Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
You know, give it to the creative guy.
And wow. I want to be like Gigi One Album, just sort of that sort of quiet guy who keeps it all ticking.
Busquets.
No, Busquets never quite did it for me. Now, De Jong. Yeah, now we're talking. De Jong, vertical player, loads of passing.
Frankie.
Or if we're talking attacking.
Yeah, man.
Who? Attacking players, Sadio Mane. I love Sadio Mane so much.
You know, who is just like getting to be one of my real loves, just watching everything he does? Riyad Mahrez.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but he's turned into a guy that I can easily just watch him all the time. He's got the way he moves and the way everything he does, it's got something just like beautiful about it. Everything's just like effortless and beautiful. I'm loving Riyad Mahrez.
It's when a quiet player becomes a badass. You tend to get like the really loud ones that make loads of noise and then they take it to another level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. And they're on the front covers and they do loads of goal celebrations. But when you get like a quiet or a shy person, just like very quietly go to the next level. So when Mane went from being, you know, Southampton, Mane was cool, but kind of inconsistent. And he went to Liverpool and then he just unlocked this whole other level.
Yeah, but what about that hat trick, bro? The hat trick in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And remember, Man United were all over him, you know. That's why I think they spoke to him. But he said, no, Man United weren't right for him. And, you know, you feel like Man United made a big mistake by not making that signing, but not being in a position to make that signing. Because as a football team, they were nowhere near giving him the kind of, I don't know, the kind of philosophy what they're going to do to attract a player like Mane, which is now arguably one of the world, easily one of the best in the world.
One thing I really love is just figuring out the person in the team that does like the coffee run. Because if you're like a Spanish player and you come to Manchester, like who's going to get you the Spanish version of Nesquik? I want to find out who's that boy, you know? Who's the link? Who's the link guy? Who's the plug for like all the foreign food you want? Because I heard the Brazilian players, there's like two group chats and there's one for the north and one for the south. And Firmino runs one group chat.
Right.
And like David Luiz runs the other one. And I want, what are they talking about? Who organizes like the Mata de Coco runs? Because you're not getting that in Sainsbury's.
Yes. So
somebody has to get that from the wholesalers.
Yep. But surely when they go abroad, would they be allowed to bring that stuff back? Let's say, so who's going? So he's going over there. So make sure you bring back this and maybe, remember, like, you know, Jesus needs this. You know what I mean? Like Gabriel, he needs that. He's only been here 5 minutes. You know, David Luiz, don't forget my favourite stuff. I'd love to see that group chat.
I want to know that, you know, Manchester United are going out to Paris soon. I want to know if Cavani's told any of the United boys, oh, yeah, when you come back from Paris, go there and like get me this thing because I forgot to bring it.
You know, the thing is as well with, just quickly on Cavani before we move, is that I saw a picture of him the other day and as a striker, you know, I know Anthony Martial and that, but as a striker and even Agallo, you see him come in, your whole energy just goes somewhere. It's not right. Because I remember when Anelka came, he was 17. And after the first two sessions of watching somebody of that caliber come in, and I know Cavani's of world-class status now, but Anelka, watching him then, my energy changed because I knew that the end was nigh. Now, I'm not saying the end is nigh for Martial, but like, I'm not, and it can't be with Cavani, but just quickly on Cavani coming in and stopping the gap. Do you think it's going to happen for him here? Is it going to be a Falcao or like I've heard people say, or a Zlatan?
I think he'll be good. I think he'll probably get somewhere between like 10 and 15 goals. And he's just going to be really good for the dressing room. But one thing that's going to be really cool is just seeing what language he's going to speak. Because I know he understands English. I know he speaks Italian fluently. I know he speaks French fluently. He also speaks Spanish.
Wow.
So like when Cavani meets Pogba, what are they going to talk in? Because they can speak three languages to each other, minimum, easy. That's the sort of weird stuff. Like when Cavani meets Pogba, what word did they use for hello?
Mm-hmm. See, I love all that silly stuff. So Carl, I'm going to be seeing you soon, huh?
Oh yeah, of course.
Listen, I just want to say to Carl Anker from The Athletic, thank you very much for being part of Righty's House. Look forward to our stuff in the future.
Forward to it. It's great.
Nice one. It should be cool. Thank you very much, my friend.
See you soon, buddy.
Stadio is in the house. Right, man.
Musa Kwongo.
Listen. In the house, man. How you doing, guys? You know, I'm so pleased to have the laugh. I've got the laugh on the house. I'm probably going to use it. And then Ryan Hunt.
Hello, Ian,
can I just say with you, I just love, you do the podcast, beautiful, love it and everything, but there's a real vicious, nasty side to you two when you just have that little 30-second blast at each other. Which is really makes me, I literally laugh my head off in the car, man.
So love.
Oh my God.
Someone's got to keep Musa in check,
Someone's got to keep Musa in check, man.
Out of control online.
Honestly, can I just quick, because we have to get into it. I just want to get into it.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to find out who your favorite footballer is and why he's your favorite footballer.
So the greatest footballer of all time is Leo Messi, in my opinion. But my favorite footballer of all time is actually George Weah. I love George Weah. And the reason I say that is because every way that this is a black man, a dark skinned black man living in mainland Europe in the mid 90s and just absolutely bossing it. The way he carried himself on and off the field and the way he played football. If you look at all those highlights, there was never a wasted skill. He could do everything with the ball, but there was always a point to it. It was like Zidane. Like Zidane, there was never a wasted trick.
No.
There was always a demonstration. Like, and Weah, the ability, there was a, you know that Ronaldinho thing when he snaps the ankle, right? The flip-flap dribble.
The flip-flap, yeah.
Weah did that years before Ronaldinho got fame for it. Not Ronaldinho, but like...
It was Rivellino I first saw it on.
Yeah, yeah, but that's, Rivellino nicked it from Sergio Achida. I learned
You're
it.
You're joking.
No. I've got to tell you this story. So Sergio Achida basically played with Rivellino, right? In Brazil. He was a Japanese-Brazilian. So Brazilian-Japanese heritage. And Achida basically goes to training because he watched, he basically, it's a piece of technology, the flip-flap. He basically watched, when you watch Garrincha, Garrincha always went outside his man, right? And Pele always came infield. Like Pele's favorite thing was infield, right? So Achida goes home and he's like, oh, why don't I combine it? Why don't I put two of the moves? Because no one's ever done that. So he goes to training and does the flip-flap and everyone stops. Everyone stops and goes wild. Like he's in the squad. He's not like a first team player. And everyone goes wild and Rivellino comes over and everyone's like, going, what was that you just did? And Rivellino goes, can you teach me that?
Wow.
And that's where it came from.
That's amazing.
Whoa. Is he saying Rivellino's a biter?
Well, but he gave credit, but no one, but Achida created it. And so I was in Rio for the World Cup and I was going and interviewing people, trying to find out the context behind what made Brazilian football.
Yes.
And this amazing guy, there was this whole panel of people, like Ray Oliveira was there. And there was this other, like this Japanese Brazilian dude. And I'm like, oh, who's this? I don't know this guy. And they were like, oh my God, he created the flip-flap.
Right.
So we had this amazing, the nicest guy.
George Weah did it.
Weah did it. Weah did the flip-flap. Weah was, and also like, as you'll know, Ian, his first time finishing was mind-blowing.
Oh, mate.
I would actually learn. So there's one game I was playing at school where I'm running along. I get the ball on the halfway line. I have my head down and I go through on goal and I hit it first time. It goes in the bottom corner. The keeper doesn't move. He's got his hands up, like his palms out because I didn't give him a tell. And I run back to the halfway line and I'm screaming going, yeah, I did it. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, George Weah did that 2 weeks ago. He scored the exact same goal. And I remember going through on goal going, this is what Weah did. Do the same thing because the keeper won't move because he won't see the tell. And what Weah did, he hit the ball with his head down. So no one knew. Yeah. And he didn't slow down. He hit the ball in stride with his head down. And I'd never seen that before. And Weah did it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally did exactly the same goal.
That's the thing. If you do that, if you do it with your head down, because remember the goalkeeper's watching you to see when you, and the only thing I can put, just a quick one is Lukic. When your head's down, Lukic is saying, right, let me see, where am I? Oh, it's over my head.
Exactly. There's no tell. It's like in gambling, right? There's no tell. And the reason I love Weah as well is because, like, I played as a nine, right? And they'd kick the, and that my had these skinny ankles, so it was just an absolute catnip for defenders. And they would just see me and hack. And Weah got absolutely punished, but he always got up and he almost like relished it. And he never ever backed down from the challenge.
No.
And it's so weird because I look back and I think, what was my obsession with this guy? And I suddenly realized because I was like a black kid at almost entirely white boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And Weah was a black guy almost entirely white
Italy.
Country. In Milan. And he went there and he bossed it. And then
have you heard how some of those players talk about it? When they speak about him, him with such love and...
But his generosity. He would give money to homeless people before training and afterwards. So he'd give them the food. He would... I mean, the way he dedicated the golden ball to like Weah,
to Wenger.
To Wenger, like all his gratitude. Weah was just like... Yeah, he's magical, my guy. Man. He's my guy.
It's funny because you know when you speak, people, once people when people talk about Africa, they he should get the credit as well, Samuel Eto'o. But I try to explain to people why I believe that as great as Samuel Eto'o is, and he, you know something, if anybody can push George Weah to being the best African, then it'd probably be Samuel Eto'o. But I think that maybe it's because I was more George Weah because of being in and around the George Weah and playing around playing against George Weah. But like, I don't think people should forget Samuel Eto'o, but them too. I don't know. Yeah, I can't. I don't think I can. Especially when you look at how it went for him. I listening to that Inter Milan, what happened to him with Inter Milan when you lot spoke about Zlatan.
Yeah, unbelievable disrespect. Oh God.
Can I just say, guys, the disrespect 11, it was fucking out there, bro, as something special, man.
Thank you.
Really was, simply because, everything. I just thought yes. And when Samuel Eto'o, and you explained, it's absolutely right. He should always get a mention.
Mm. Yeah.
When we played against him, Paris Saint Germain with Ginola in the team, it was just brilliant to watch him. Against Tony and those guys, it was just like, it was really like very, watching him play against them, it just seemed very easy how he was playing.
Just a touch.
And everything. And even Ginola as well, somebody that...
Oh my God.
You know, I can't believe, in respects of disrespected, that Bulgaria, getting the blame.
Horrible. Oh, horrible. Horrible.
You know, I don't think he ever recovered from that, but no. I just felt, as you mentioned George Weah there, I just remembered a game. Ginola was amazing as well, but he just couldn't, he'd done everything at his in that game at his pace. Went past people very easily, linked up the play very easy, held people. It was all very easy.
I think that's the thing about great players, right? It's like genuinely great players. It's kind of like you're playing on their pitch no matter where it is. Does that make sense? There's like an aura about it where it's like, we're going on my terms, you know, which... I mean, it's like my favorite player. We were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, weren't we? Right, like Johan Cruyff, for example. Yes. Like Johan Cruyff is probably my all-time favorite player because he didn't look like a footballer. I don't think.
Mm.
You know, just this like super skinny, looked like he should be in a band.
Yeah.
Like, almost every single photo of Johan Cruyff could be an album cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also just ability-wise, I think he's someone who often gets left out of the conversation for all-time greats.
Yeah. You know, because you watch the World Cups and you want the player that's going in with the most hype and everything, what everybody's expecting from them. Okay, I know that Maradona done it in 86, but when I was a kid and they used to speak about Johan Cruyff and like this Cruyff guy, you got to watch this Cruyff. My brother used to say, you got to watch this Cruyff. And then he done it in that World Cup. It was a World Cup where Brazil were just like, honestly, it's like they just picked a load of fat blokes and Jairzinho. I think Rivellino was still there as well. But like, I remember Johan Cruyff in the final, in the first minute, when he picked up the ball and just went and got the penalty. I was like, I don't know what was I being, like, 12, I think 13 maybe. And I was just like, oh my God, he's just amazing.
Yeah.
Who would you play with, Ryan? Who's your guy? I'm going to ask you as well, Moose. So think about who would you play with now to get the best out of Moose as a number nine? And Ryan, as that midfield general that I so hear about with you, who are you playing with?
Who are you playing with? Small to be a general. I'm like...
No, man. Xavi, man. Look at Xavi. Xavi.
This is a really tough question. I'd love to play with... Well, that Aston Villa midfield just looks well fun now. I'd love to be the other one. Like, I'd love to be the six behind Barkley and Grealish, because I think it would be quite fun.
You know what I love about Grealish and Barkley? Can almost see after the game, they just say, come on, let's just go and play PlayStation. Let's go and do stuff. They're so happy. I love the fact that Jack Grealish, with the power that he's got there now, Ryan, he said, go and get Ross Barkley for me, because he's going to help me, right? I just get the impression that they do that.
Yeah.
That he's done that. Because they look so good.
Yeah. They were really fun.
Amazing. The crew fun. Villa. Everyone
And then Ollie Watkins up front.
Yeah.
I'd love to play on that side.
I don't know if I'd be able to explain to you guys, for Ollie Watkins and the pressure that Dean Smith was probably under to say, I'm going to pay that kind of money for him.
Yeah.
Mm. And then, scoring the Fulham game where you watched him and I thought, he's done some really good stuff there. Shouldn't, I'd like to see him in the box a bit more. But then you play Liverpool, and obviously Jack's helped him, but to score a hat-trick against arguably one of the best teams, easily one of the best teams in the world at the moment, and going to go down as one of the best teams in the Premier League easily. I can't even tell you what that does for his confidence. I can't even tell you. It's nothing he believes he can't do when he goes out there now.
Yeah. Do you know what's funny? I was talking about this actually, Ian, before I get into the player I'd like to play with most.
Mm.
I was talking about that goal that David Beckham scores from halfway line, right?
Mm.
And that goal has the kind of the Watkins effect, or we could call it, where it basically elevates you. Like David Beckham at that point was just another brilliant young player.
Yeah.
And that goal, it was mythology, right?
Mm.
And when you have mythology as a player, what that does, you know, not just for confidence, but like it buys you 3 extra years at any club you're at.
Mm-hmm.
It buys the confidence of people, and I remember thinking, like, I wonder how often Beckham thinks, what if I hadn't shot? Because he would just go on, he would still have had a great career, don't get me wrong. But that mythical moment, it's like everyone in the world the next morning knew who Beckham was.
Yes.
It's before social media. Everyone
knew. It's like a one-hit wonder vibe, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, but
it's like, actually, my better work came later, but everyone keeps asking me to play that one.
But it is a one-hit wonder, but then everyone announces themselves. You look at like Wayne Rooney with a goal against Arsenal.
Oh, yes.
And you have to, like, every great player has a moment when they're like,
Michael Owen.
Messi with the final goal, with the hat-trick against Madrid, the final goal. When he basically takes the pass that's meant for someone else, and he's like, actually, do you know what? Like, it's Messi time. Like, so the player I would most like to play with, who I think, just being an absolute joy, would be Kevin De Bruyne.
Yes. Yes.
Because he would just find you anywhere. And there's a story I heard about Ali Bernabéu when he played at Monaco with Henri and Trezeguet, about how Bernabéu would find you with his head down with the outside of either foot in the midfield.
Yes.
And De Bruyne has that thing, the early release from midfield. Unbelievable. So he'd be the guy. Yeah.
He could find you
anywhere.
You say that and it just reminds me, Bergkamp. I'm not sure if I've told you this before, but once I had to get used to him, obviously he played in training and they played us together. And one of the things that I realized, why I'm playing with the cream, is that a lot of the balls that he played to me in the first few training sessions were hitting me on the back of the leg, because my run should have been right for him to get it to me, because do you understand what I'm trying to say to you?
That is a mind-blowing story.
I'm fucking telling you, Musa. It was like, I was thinking to myself, and you know what? The pressure I felt thinking, this guy's so way in front, I'm still fucking running forward when I should have, I was stopped by then, or because those players don't make mistakes in the passes.
That is science fiction. That is one of the greatest stories I've ever.
Honestly, what I had to realize was, I just had to make sure I've got to watch him. And I've got to make sure, I've got to make sure I watch the defender. And I've got to make sure, when's the ball getting to Dennis? I've got to make sure that's it, because the ball was hitting me on the back of the legs.
That is mind blowing.
In the first few sessions. And then once you get used to it, I realized that I had to, he's kind of telling me, you need to wait a split more second.
That is one of the greatest stories.
What you do when you finish the training session, when you go home, you think to yourself, I'm playing with the cream. These players are the ones that people will talk about. Because it was something that I was thinking, what the fuck am I doing wrong? Dennis said, you know, you maybe need to just hold the run for a split second.
Wow.
That is mind. But do you know why? Because those are the stories, you know, those stories. Sorry, I've got the shivers here.
Mm.
Those are the stories you don't hear. You know, that everyone always says in training, you had to see Varane in training. He was the best ever seen in training. But you don't hear stories like that. You don't hear about the weight. And I remember reading this one thing. It was they were interviewing Xavi about the kind of passes that he hands out. And Xavi was going, oh yeah, like he was describing all the different types of spin on the ball that different players like. And I'm like, the level, and Xavi completes 95% of passes every game for his entire career. So it means that he's calculating exactly what everyone needs all the time for 15 years?
For 15 years. And the thing is that with those players, guys, is that it doesn't matter where the ball ends up in and around their feet, like you mentioned with De Bruyne, they get the ball to you. That's their ability. That's their ability. Because you look at, I can't stop talking about the Newcastle goal. And how Dennis readjusted himself. It was so annoying for me, for people to constantly ask about, do you think he meant it? You're missing the point. Mm. It's got nothing to do with meaning what he'd done. We've never seen that goal before or after, because the ability that Dennis has to think so quickly, when he explains it, you think, well, that makes perfect sense. But why have we never seen it? Because the ball was behind him.
Yeah.
And he manufactured something But then you saw the class come out when the way he just finished it, like it was nothing. Then he ran away as if it was nothing. But everybody in the stadium and everybody watches it have just seen something that's just awesome.
Yeah, because it's absolutely impossible to generate that. Even when you're, you know, if you've got the ball, if you've got a tennis ball in your hand, mm-hmm. it's impossible to generate that spin with a tennis ball and your hand, let alone with the instep. And then with Dabazas, a very good defender on your back, a very good defender.
Oh, gosh.
It is almost impossible to do that in your own house with your hands. Mm-hmm. And you do it with, this is why Bergkamp, I mean, his goal against, the one he scored against Argentina.
Oh yes, the touch.
Honestly, he bounces the ball under Nelson Vivas with his studs, And I'm like, are people seeing this? And I turned to my cousins, I was like, this is actually, is this even, not illegal, but is it possible?
It's awesome.
Or Nelson Viva.
And he saw him at training the next season, didn't he?
It's the quickness of thought, what you're trying to explain. And what I'm saying with him, his pass is hitting me. And then you get used to it. And then once I got used to it, like I said, my game went to another level in respects of, then it's up to me to sort out the touch and sort out the finish.
Yeah, of course.
But in respects of like, this is why if I had to choose somebody right now, I would, it's really weird because I just feel like I don't know if I could play for City or Liverpool, right? I'd probably want to play for Aston Villa in this moment because of Jack Grealish and Ross Barkley.
Wow.
Only because the work rate that you have to do for, it's not enough just to be up there with Pep.
No.
I need freedom. No. I need the freedom, you know? Like I need that freedom of being
and
able
Villa
to-
Villa have the freedom. Villa, don't they? They've got that thing.
Villa are a team now that are just, if they were walking down the street, they'd be wearing the coolest trainers, the coolest trousers.
And that's a great town as well. That's the thing I love about Aston Villa. The thing I love about Birmingham as well. As a town, that is a great town. And like the vibe there must
be incredible.
It's going
to kick off. I'm desperate for it, for the fans to get back in for Villa right now because it's starting to come to me now, Moose, Ryan, is that I'm getting a Leicester vibe. I'm getting a Leicester vibe, nearly going down.
Yeah.
Coming next season. And then in a Premier League season where I cannot tell you who's going to be the top three, top four. Can't tell you right now because everything's so inconsistent and chaotic. I just love a Villa to just have a blast, the Everton to just have a blast.
Do you know what I think as well? There's Leicester vibes there too. You look at Douglas Luiz, who's just started to play for Brazil. Mm-hmm. You know how like Leicester had all those players who are wildly underrated and all of a sudden they exploded onto the world scene 2 years later?
Yes.
So like 2 years from now, everyone's going to be like, oh my God, those guys are actually amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like
Trezeguet. Yeah. I loved it. You see Trezeguet?
So good.
Have you seen the skills on this guy?
Oh my gosh.
Wouldn't it be great if Villa went back into the Champions League? Well, they've never been in the Champions League as the Champions
League. Since 84.
Mm. Villa won more European Cups than Arsenal, Man City and Spurs put together. As many European Cups as Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City and Spurs put together.
Mm-hmm. Listen, thanks to everybody who's been on, but thanks to Stadio. Stadio, guys, thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Pleasure. We love it.
I'm going to have to throw you out of the house in a nice way. remember, the door is always open. So that's it for the first episode of Righty's House. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks Jeanette. Thanks Ryan Hahn. Thanks Musa Kwongo. Thank you Carl Anker from The Athletic. You know something, I really enjoyed that. We're going to go again next week and talking about whatever topics come up to be talked about in Righty's House. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next week, man.